plate a potential nugget.
One of the things in the book, Raghu, which really caught my attention was you say that actually Bhagavad Gita might very well have been a conversation between Karna and Krishna. And the fact that it didn't happen was a lost opportunity. Karna possibly did not even see that as an opportunity. And
that's
eventually,
right.
Eventually it ended up being a conversation between Arjuna and Krishna.
That's right.
So do you want to expand on that? How just the implication of that insight in daily life, you know, what if you want to sort of...
Yeah, sure. See, there's one very, very exciting thing in the Bharatakutana, Tamil Bharatakuta, where there is a conversation between Sanjaya and Dhritarashtra, which is a retelling of the whole Mahabharata. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very interesting because the whole dialogue goes like this. Na? Dhritarashtra says, hey, tell me the story again so that I can understand where I screwed up. Okay, so Sanjaya goes through the whole story. And he goes step by step. He says, that is where I lost the war. Yeah, there this, you know, he goes through this thing of his son having, you know, been envious. And he comes and talks to Dhritarashtra from that envy. He says, I lost the war then. And like that, now he goes through step by step. Each step where if the Kaurava side had responded differently, there would have been no war. Okay. Now, if you look at the character of Karna, he's a Pandava, right? But abandoned, and he holds deep, deep wounds, right? Of, orphanhood, of honor, and things like this. And there are many stories that tell you how he's actually a greater warrior than Arjuna in many ways, right? He's much more capable, right? But there is this deep anger and angst and hurt in him, apart from his other greatness. Na? And if you look at many situations, yeah, you'll see that people with tremendous capability, but with a deep wound, have used all their capability in vengefulness or in some way to keep compensating for the hurt, never healing the hurt. Right? Now, if Karna, who is very, you know, he's very alive today, okay? You know, every person with a grouse about us and them is a Karna. Yeah, every person who feels deprived or denied or discriminated against is a Karna. Right? And these are people with lot of ability, lot of capability, whom society has said, because you're not of certain pedigree, your beauty and your capability will not be honored. Right? And almost every crisis today, you can trace it back to this kind of a violation of human beings, right? So if I can have a conversation with this hurt psyche and help this psyche heal and say, I will move from using my power for retribution, yeah, using my power for, some vengefulness, to looking at how to build a beautiful world. Right? It would change everything. That's what they tried now in South Africa. Truth and reconciliation. That's what Gandhiji tried now. Of saying, how can I assert myself? How can I ask for independence without hating the oppressor? Right? Because once you hate the oppressor, you internalize the oppressor. And you then become extremely oppressive yourself. You can see that in history. Right? So this conversation is waiting to be had. Yeah? And if enough people who are suffering from the reality of all colonized people in the world are waiting for this dialogue.
Fascinating.
right? And then they become the oppressors, or yeah, many of the people in the so-called West, na, who have misused their power, you go back, they will have a story of vengefulness, of hate. Right? So if you can have a conversation with a Krishna where this hate is dissolved, the world will be a different place.
Building on that, Raghu, who then plays the role of Krishna to facilitate these conversations?
Krishna is not a human being, Deepak.
True.
Krishna is this divine intelligence, the consciousness within.
Raghu, if we bring this to our current situation and context, the Karna-Krishna discussion, do you see that happening? Has it been had in different situations that you observe?
Yes, yes, I think it's been had. For example, this truth and reconciliation thing that was tried out in South Africa was clearly an attempt to enable people who've been violated to have a conversation with their violators in a larger context, not of retribution, but of some kind of a healing process, right? I think this has qualities of what I'm talking about, right? The way Gandhiji spoke about Swaraj, about Swatantrata, was, I think, another step in this direction, right? Where he was clearly not coming from a hate of the oppressor, but, you know, he took Tilak's statement, na, Swaraj is my birthright, to a very beautiful level, na? So I don't have to ask for independence from you. I claim my independence. But this claiming of independence, if it's with anger and hate, it's not independence.
I want to pause here and play a small clip from Dr. Ramachandra Guha, who made a similar point at the podcast about what Swaraj meant for Gandhiji.
For Gandhi, political independence meant nothing at all unless it was accompanied by religious harmony, caste and gender equality, and the development of self-respect in every Indian. Other patriots had used the Hindi word Swaraj to signify national independence. Gandhi made Indians aware of its true or original meaning, Swaraj or self-rule.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Fascinating. So that is Gandhi in his own words. And that's also why, as I told you a little while ago, I don't believe in saying this is the most important thing, this is the only cause, this is the one route to success.
Let's get back to Raghu now.
So there is a deep healing of wounds here and a listening to a voice which helps you dissolve this anger, dissolves vengefulness, and so on, right? Martin Luther King has talked about it. There are people today working in the Israel Palestine context who are speaking about similar things, right? Where Israelis and Palestinians are talking about how we get beyond mutuality of hurt and, you know, violence of this kind and look at each other as human beings, right? So it's not as though there are no indications of this, but I think it has to be, you know, emphasized. It has to have a very, very strong presence.
Mm-hmm. And Krishna at some level is not a person, but it's a concept. But who?
No, more than a concept. It's not just a concept. See, when I dissolve my sense of self, see, in the yoga tradition, this is very, very clear. And partly this is what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita also, na? When the sense of self is dissolved completely, then the mind becomes silent. Right? In that silence, there is the voice of pure intelligence, of consciousness that can be heard. That voice is the voice of Krishna. That is Krishna. Right? Now, it is portrayed in a human form for the dramatic thing and to build up that whole context and so on. And also now, if you look at the Indian context, you know, all the gods grow with you. Right? So Krishna initially will be shown as this little guy who loves butter, and so the child can relate to this. But you're also told that these are the Kalyana Gunas. Now these are all the most beautiful qualities of this child. Then he becomes an adolescent, right? And then he becomes a young person. Finally, you're told that Krishna is the deep indigo color of the sky when there is no moon. So you're having a conversation with that. Whatever you want to call it. Krishna. So you call it Krishna, right? You're just referring to this color, yeah, to dark matter.
I love the way Raghu connects the conversation that never happened between Karna and Krishna and to the human condition today with several communities around the world. This is such a profound point about our self-awareness as we go through our respective lives. How aware are we about the various elements and the dilemmas we face? No easy answers, but I guess the first step is in each one of us recognizing that there's a dilemma out there and having a conversation with our own Krishnas inside us, as Raghu so appropriately corrects me in the conversation.